Track 7, London Landmarks. Well, if you were listening to our first edition of Just Talk last month, you'll have heard David Clayton recounting the time he talked to Andrew Sachs, who played the lovable Spanish waiter Manuel in Fawlty Towers. So now, from the London Beyond Sight project, you can hear Andrew Sachs himself talking about his childhood discovery of London Zoo and his interest in animals. And no, he doesn't speak with a Spanish accent.
Maybe it's because I'm a Londoner that I love London so.
Hello, my name is Andrew Sachs. I'm an actor and a writer, and I've been asked to share with you one of my favourite interests from childhood that are with me still. I speak of the world of animals, wild ones in particular. I first visited the London Zoo in Regent's Park not long after our family had arrived in England as refugees from Nazi Germany. Our Jewish father had managed to escape to London a few months before we were able to follow. And he met us again at Waterloo Station with the good news he had found a small house for us and a reasonable job for himself. But at just 8 years old, my heart was still in Berlin, where our dear mum had given us a final treat before leaving the country. She took us to Berlin Zoo, my first visit to any zoo. Well, Waterloo Station wasn't half as nice, and I couldn't speak any English. So I had a good cry until my dad told me about the London Zoo, and I cheered up. A friendly colleague of his, who lived near the zoo, invited me to stay the weekend with his wife and young family. We went to the zoo twice in that weekend, and when we got back for supper, and it was getting dark, we could hear the roaring of the wild beasts half a mile away. Once I'd been persuaded they wouldn't escape from their cages and eat me, I relaxed and fell asleep dreaming of Africa. Some months later, we moved to a more central part of London, and I became a regular visitor to the zoo. By then, the Second World War had begun, and I was the proud owner of a pair of tame mice of the same sex. And one day, they miraculously turned into more than a dozen, thus breaching my permitted number, and I had to find them a new home. Well, I was confident the zoo would accept my gift with gratitude. I had noticed labels on the cages with donated by so-and-so and adopted by so-and-so, and I hoped my mice would make me famous. Rather than going to a public entrance, I made straight for the headquarters of the Zoological Society itself, just a few yards away. I met a real zoologist there, well, I think he was anyway, who told me how they were evacuating the elephants and rare or dangerous animals like the big cats at risk from enemy bombs or of escaping into Regent's Park and attacking the people. He also took an interest in my ambitions and accepted my mice. And he asked me if I was about to pop into the zoo anyway. So I nodded and showed him my sixpence, but he said, "Oh, put it away, boy, and follow me." And he let me in through a private gate for nothing. Well, my sister later told me how silly I'd been because the mice would have been fed to the snakes and crocodiles. Oh, I hated her for a whole week. Well, one day, shortly after the war was over, I found a bag of bananas my sister had been given by a soldier friend returning from the war. He can't have liked her much because there was a huge spider at the bottom of the bag still alive. So I telephoned the zoo straight away, who asked me to bring it to the insect house. And I got there as quick as I could and asked the keeper there if my spider was deadly poisonous. "All spiders are poisonous," he replied. Well, that was news to me. He let me stay with him for a while, and I finally left with enough information about deadly spiders and scorpions and creepy crawlies of the world to make all the girls at my school scream with fear. I remember another time at the zoo that I noticed a tortoise climbing up the railings of his cage and falling hopelessly and helplessly back down all the time until another tortoise crawled up and pushed the first one onto its feet again. What a miracle that was! Here we had dumb animals helping each other to survive. My curiosity about wildlife in general came from three hefty books in German with many beautifully engraved illustrations called Brehm's Tierleben. It was an 1879 edition of an encyclopedia of animal life that we'd managed to bring over with us. And those books are still right here with me now. The Gothic typeface was no problem, I was used to that, but the subject matter was almost inscrutable until, at a later stage, when I made the great discovery that as far as Mr. Brehm was concerned, the okapi, a shy mammal from the Congo rainforest in Central Africa, related to the giraffe, simply didn't exist, according to Mr. Brehm. Oh, I wish I could have enlightened him at the time with my news that it did exist. Although, not officially, until 1901, when it was so-called discovered by a British explorer, Sir Harry Johnston, and named after him as Okapia Johnstoni. Well, the pygmy tribes of the Congolese natives had, of course, known about it for a long time before that. As I grew older, I read up about the okapis, although I never got to see one, try as I might. But after many years of working as an actor, at home and abroad, I revisited the London Zoo, and there they were, nearly 30 years later, right in front of me, almost in my own backyard. their body shape resembles that of a giraffe, only smaller, but because they're about the size of a horse, that's all, with a longish neck, though not nearly as long as that of a giraffe. Okapis have a really attractive, reddish-brown, short, velvety coat, oily to keep off the rain, white legs from ankle to knee, then horizontal black and white stripes all the way up their backside, almost like a zebra. And like giraffes, okapis have tongues almost a foot long, can you believe, for stripping leaves from the trees. And listen to this. Their tongues are long enough to wash their own ears inside and out. That's fantastic. To think that you too, dear listeners, could nowadays experience close encounters with okapis in a matter of minutes, rather than the 30 years like me. But I've no complaints. I've followed my profession now for well over 60 years, and I'm still at it, but I feel particularly privileged to have become involved in countless wildlife documentary programs and series as a narrator for the BBC and other channels, both in Britain and abroad. And to think it all began, more or less, with those early visits to the London Zoo.
Andrew clearly has very vivid memories of that early part of his life. I wonder if he thought back to his ownership of white mice when his character Manuel acquired his pet rat Basil, of whom he was so fond and which he had to keep secret for obvious reasons.